Europe is complicated. How insensitive can Volkswagen be? Previously in Europe, Puigdemont's hopes and dreams.
And now for a follow-up section where we briefly mention things that we talked about before and how they've slightly changed. Briefly.
Yes, ideally very briefly. Get on with this.
Very briefly. Okay, cool, go. The Irish government has backed an abortion vote date for May. Mm-hmm. We talked about this last episode quite a bit about the upcoming repeal of the 8th Amendment in Ireland, and they have backed it for happening in May.
Yes.
Which is good. Mm. There's a date now.
Yeah, and now it sounds like the leader of the opposition and the current Taoiseach/Prime Minister, whatever you want to call him, I don't really care. They've both come out saying that they're in favor of it passing. Is that correct? I think so. Sort of.
Yes. Sort of. God, it's a complicated thing. Moving on. Italy has restaked its claim to the agency, the medicine agency, ahead of an election, specifically ahead of their election. This was very much received as being grandstanding for the purposes of the election, to make it feel like they're politicians. We're not subservient to you, Europe. We fight for you. Don't vote for Five Star Movement.
Yeah, this is basically for the one of the EU agencies leaving the UK when they leave the EU is the EU Medicines Agency, which, you know, is kind of like, it's like the American FDA, which I think gets more news cred headlines, where like they approve drugs, etc. Like, it's a big boon to a city to have it, and it was between Amsterdam, Milan, and Amsterdam got it in the end, and it was kind of seen as a fuck you in Italy, and they're now they have an official complaint in with the European Courts of Justice to get it returned. So we'll see where that goes. Possibly nowhere.
Probably nowhere.
Moving on to the German election, post-election that's still going on. Currently, there's Grand Coalition or GroKo talks going on between Angela Merkel and Martin Schulz and their various negotiators. And the kind of news this week about it was that they had come to a compromise about some refugee provisions, namely about family reunification provisions, where kind of like giving asylum to direct family members of current accepted asylum seekers, which is relatively controversial. This has been getting a lot of coverage lately in the States and being referred to as chain migration, which is nice. Yeah, but that's kind of more for like people who have like emigrated properly, but this is for refugees. And they've come to an agreement, which is they're gonna have a moratorium on it until August, and then they would start back up again at 1,000 people per month and kind of do it on a application merit based system. This might possibly be moot because the, you know, coalition talks might not go anywhere more, they might fall apart, or like I've read a lot more and heard a lot more on via various news sources of people more on the in with German politics who are of the opinion that these talks will come to a deal and then the SPD or CDU or CSU will reject them. Like their party members, when they actually have to show them the deal, they'll say no, definitely not, and there will be no Grand Coalition. So we'll see.
Yes. Similarly, post-election, Puigdemont, Catalan's former leader, has now claimed that he no longer is seeking to lead the region. Yes, the Catalan separatist leader, Carles Puigdemont, who is the sole candidate for president in the region's government despite being in exile in Belgium, told an ally in a text message that it's over, they have sacrificed us. The message was revealed by Spanish media a day after the vote was postponed by the Catalan Parliament Speaker. Puigdemont confirmed the message's authenticity and explained that he has moments of doubts. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Poor Puigdemont. He's sad.
He's had a poor run of it.
Yeah. I think, you can imagine being in exile and just, you can't go back home. And people are like, oh, we'll sort out your presidency of the parliament. Might just not happen. Puigdemont might be stuck, not being able to go back to Spain, is effectively what might end up happening, which would be like a disappointing end to the whole Catalan referendum thing.
Yeah, I mean, be interesting to see what the Catalonian parliament does in his absence.
Yeah.
Because it's still, like, separatist controlled.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think, like, this is the question of how long will pass before it will become inconvenient to them to not, like, sufficiently inconvenient to them not to have a functioning Catalan parliament, and that they will eventually just nominate someone else. Because this might not go anywhere for quite a while. Unclear.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Unclear.
Poor Puigdemont. And, you know, the people, poor people who want to arrest Puigdemont because, you know, they can't. Largely. The ongoing Article 7 procedures against Poland about the Polish government's kind of progress towards reforming, as they would put it, their judiciary, and how that might be a serious breach of EU requirements, kind of a, if you reform your judiciary in the way you're saying you're going to and have started doing, you wouldn't get into the EU because you wouldn't meet our rule of law requirements in the first place. So they're pursuing Article 7 procedures, which would do things like, in like down the road, could do things like limiting Poland's voting rights, etc. So this has made it through like one of the hurdles in the parliament, where the Parliament Committee on Civil Liberties, Justice and Home Affairs passed it effectively 33 votes to 9, which is kind of, you know, I'm sure there's perhaps a Polish member on that committee that voted against it. Anyway.
That was the end of our brief catch-up section. Look how brief it was. We did it.
Congratulations, Ciarán. Congratulations.
Woo! Congratulations to you, Hugh.
And now, unfortunately, we're going to have to revisit the was Dieselgate last year or the year before? I think it might be the year before. Anyway,
it's been so long.
Yeah. So if anyone remembers Dieselgate, which effectively was, it turned out that Volkswagen and a number of other like German car manufacturers, but perhaps it might be a wider problem in the industry, were effectively gaming the emission standards tests. So the Volkswagen like headline item about it was Volkswagen effectively had software in their cars that they could detect when they were in testing mode, and then they would actually like lower the car performance and emit fewer toxic chemicals into the, like, so their emissions would appear lower if you were measuring their emissions. But then when you did a performance test and you could put them in the normal mode where you weren't checking their emissions, and the car would look like it was getting a very good performance for very low emissions. And as it turned out, yeah, they were basically putting the car in like low power mode effectively, to make it look like if you were using it, it was actually very safe, when it turns out that's not true. This kind of largely centered around their, like, the big marketing push from a lot of people, like a lot of car companies, was you should buy diesel cars because they're more, we've now made them a lot more fuel efficient, and on top of that, they are better for the environment.
Yes.
And because they were better for the environment, via these emissions tests, a lot of countries would ended up bringing in progressive car taxes for emissions. So kind of if you bought a very bad emissions car, you got taxed higher on it, which seemed to make sense. But if it turns out the numbers that those were all based on were manipulated, it actually doesn't matter. Yeah. It's not environmentally friendly. So as it's turned, like, another kind of more, I would say, horrific detail of, you might have guessed that they did this kind of research, but like, it's, there's now confirmation about it, which is a research group that was entirely funded by the German car industry, the European Research Group of Environment and Health, which is now which is a car lobby group that it was entirely funded by German car makers. We're involved in funding or funded a experiment which was done in America, where they effectively kept monkeys in like Perspex containers doing other activities while they pumped in diesel emissions. And the point of this was to prove that the diesel emissions were safer than like other studies were saying they were, so that even it, like, on top of their manipulated emissions data, they could also say, and we've also proved that nitrogen dioxide, which is the big difference that you get between diesel and petrol cars, is also actually not that dangerous, so it's totally fine. And yeah, effectively it's now like coming out about this due to like a big piece done in the New York Times about it, that like the reason it's coming out is because they're being sued about this research in the US. It's like coming out effectively at like there's a lot of problems with the methodology. Volkswagen people, like management of Volkswagen, are saying like, oh, we didn't know about this, and their response was to fire their chief lobbyist, who would be involved with like dealing with this lobbying group that was funding the research. But like there's a lot of details surrounding the reporting on this which makes it very clear that management in Volkswagen were definitely aware prior to the research being conducted that they did know about it. And this is the same thing of the problem when like the Dieselgate thing happened in the first place, was there was a lot of kind of within the car companies of, oh, we can point to this head of this engineering department that like did this and we didn't know about it. They did it purely themselves. It was like, well, at no point did anyone ever mention to you that they had a way of, or like no one ever questioned how they had worked, produced these magic figures. Seems implausible. And if there's now multiple layers of this and you were also doing experiments that like you knew wouldn't be received well by basically anybody, doesn't seem great. There was also a trial with human participants, which is odd that it's getting less less like big headlines, but I think part of it is kind of like theoretically you could inform the people involved to a certain extent, but
it's a consent and voluntary nature question, isn't it?
Because this was the point of this research was to disprove existing research that we knew, like that we know that nitrogen dioxide is bad for you, and they were saying like, well, we know it's bad for you, but like we don't think it's as bad for you as you're saying. And like there's been a lot of people comparing this to, well, this is what Big Tobacco did for years, was, oh, well, we have our own research that shows that tobacco's not as, like, oh, we're not saying it's not bad for you, but it's not nearly as bad for you as everyone says. And it's like, well, that, yeah, ooh, this is you pumping out what you call research, and it's quite sketchy.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been a fair amount of exposés regarding, like oil companies, petroleum companies, when you mention it like this, the car companies probably knew what they were doing as well, that like downplayed or discredited anything that was about like emissions pollution or global warming. I think probably by the time we're old and gray, people will look on these industries the same way we look at Big Tobacco now.
And I think the difference here is like the big difference here is that Big Tobacco are selling a product that we know is a health problem and has no, like, other than recreation, has no actual benefit. Whereas like people, like the argument against this, well, people need cars, and it's like, well, yes, but you specifically lied to people, and the people involved are possibly just going to get away with it. Like the high ups in like Volkswagen and BMW are involved in funding the lobby group that paid for this research as well. So it's like, well, are the people the heads of those companies and kind of like a lot of their middle management who definitely knew about this and like didn't do anything or say anything and were knowingly lying to people about it, like they were complicit in in doing this, and it's kind of like you understand when they're like when they're challenging, you understand their logic of challenging the WHO, etc. Marking diesel emissions as carcinogens, but then it gets into layers of, oh well, then if you like, if on top of that you also commit fraud largely like in a lot of ways, that's at some point someone needs to be held somewhat accountable, I guess.
And also, like, any report that downplays like the effect of emissions pollution, like, yes, you can make arguments about like how cars solve a problem that could be solved in other ways. Like, it solves the problem of we don't live close to our work, and then you get into whole issues of like property markets and stuff like that. But then, like, ignoring that and saying yes, we do need cars, I think like all these kind of reports just like push things down, like, okay, but we could make a massive push towards like electric vehicles. We could like make some sort of radical legislation that really just out like aggressively phases out diesel, petrol based cars in favor of electric cars, which I know isn't like the green environmental god that it is, but it's when you're talking about emissions, it certainly helps.
This is the like those like consistently massive pushback in the auto industry of, well, we can't make everything electric because that's infeasible, and like you have to produce the electricity somewhere, so it's actually not solving your problem. It's like, well we like it's initially like very easy to make the jump of, yeah, but surely like creating emissions, lots and lots of small emissions all around us where everybody lives, is worse for people than producing in one place theoretically much further from where people live and actually managing that centrally and not having people do it themselves individually. It was like, well, yeah, but we would rather people buy the car designs. It would be very expensive for these companies. They put millions and millions of euros a year into research on like building up their car platform that'll like last them for years and years, and making them overhaul that would be incredibly expensive, and all their people are trained to make cars that burn fossil fuels, which that's a problem. But I think like this is not dissimilar to the pushback of electric cars aren't good because you end up creating electricity via fossil fuels. And it's like, well, no, but there's a compound problem that you're actively ignoring with this, and this is just showing that like there's a concerted effort to cover that up very specifically and make it not seem like that's actually a problem, to kind of slow things down, which is a
I mean, there's the I mean, like, you can also counter that argument of like, the electricity generated for electric cars comes from fossil fuels. Like, well, yeah, we're also hassling those companies about changing that. But we're not going to wait. We're not going to have you sit in your ass until we have like the perfect wind and solar energy grid to then start making electric cars.
Yeah, and it's the consistent thing of like cities that do stuff like create bypasses and stuff, and or like in Dublin, I don't know about you, but I remember the air quality in Dublin being like conspicuously worse when all trucks had to drive from the port through the city centre to get anywhere. So there was consistent trucks going through the city center. It's like, well, that's obviously reducing traffic in the center of cities makes the air a little bit cleaner. It's still not going to be clean because it's a city and there's a lot of other problems, etc. And people, like, there's a certain amount of like exhausts from everyone's boilers and like various other stuff. But it's not, it's not the same as having like a traffic jam in the center of a city that you've told us one thing about that is like, objectively not true. Cars.
So Volkswagen monsters.
Just bad people. It's not great, as it turns out. This isn't saying like the car industry is evil. It's, as it turns out, the people who are running Volkswagen are probably not great.
I'm saying the car industry is evil.
I'm not saying it's like irredeemably evil.
All right, fair enough. Fair enough.
It's not big tobacco, but they're doing a lot of big tobacco-y things, which aren't great.
So, Hugh, it's time for the election section, mm-hmm. and specifically a presidential election section. Mm-hmm. Woo!
Yeah, sure.
Presidential. So there was two presidential elections this week in Europe. There will actually, by the time you're hearing this, there will be three, but we can't predict the results of the Cypriot presidential election in advance.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the Czech presidential election.
Yes.
We've been talking about this quite a bit because the lead up to this election has been quite interesting because the Czech Republic still doesn't have a government, mm-hmm. technically, mm-hmm. After recent legislative elections. So who won the presidential election was kind of important due to the fact that the incumbent president, Zeman, Miloš Zeman, mm-hmm. Was very much in favor of the new frontrunner of the Czech government, Babiš. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Caretaker prime minister. That's the correct way of putting it, yes. So the election happened and the young, scrappy, new incumbent independent politician Drahoš lost. And incumbent president Miloš Zeman mm-hmm. is president once again.
Yep.
He won. The turnout was pretty high, 66.6%, which is the highest it's been in any election in the Czech Republic since 1998.
Yeah, which I think it's funny of just like anything. Yeah, when you're saying percentages, the number starts with a six, and you're like, oh no, that's record.
Well, it is actually
six. That's not right.
Demonic, like, Illuminati conspiracy, because turnout rate was 666.
No, it's just...
Okay. I'll put my tinfoil hat away, then.
No, it's just kind of like, turnout in the 60% isn't, like, as in... No matter what you say, it doesn't, like, it's not good. That's a bad turnout. I know it's best.
It's always, like good, comparatively.
Yeah. As in, like, the turnout was high, but as in, like... It's God, 40% of people not voting... is enormous.
34%.
That's enormous.
Yeah, that's fair. The race was very, very tight. Miloš got 51.4% of the vote. And I don't know how to pronounce his first name. Drahoš. Mm-hmm. Drahoš. Mm-hmm. Got 48.6% of the vote. So very, very tight. And... as we talked about on the lead up to this, the polls had been slowly changing over time. Apparently, Drahoš had about a 10% lead in September. And this is back when they were like pairing various people against various people.
Mm-hmm.
But most polls, because the polls had very much predicted that Zeman was going to win the first round, it was all about like, okay, Zeman versus who?
Yes. Yeah.
Let's see. And yeah, Drahoš was winning like by 10% in September, but that number had been gradually falling up until January, late January, when the polls had switched to be like to being like a 0.5% lead.
Yeah.
Like to either candidate. So it was very much on a nice edge towards the end of it.
Yeah. 51.4 to 48.6 is pretty close.
It's pretty darn close.
That's in polling error territory, is what that is. Like, that's, yeah. Ooh.
Yeah, very much. Like,
yeah.
If one like municipality like screwed up their vote count, that could have swung the whole thing.
Yeah. So alongside this, Babiš, yeah. the prime minister for now, let's say, he was in Brussels. Effectively, to give the message to the EU that I'm relatively pro EU, and have you met like the rest of the Czech Parliament? There's like a lot of like, his message effectively is like, I'm pro EU. Zeman's not particularly, but like we're the best. You have to work with him, and I'm the best you're gonna get in terms of prime ministers, because kind of effectively saying like his argument is largely there are extremist parties who have seats in the parliament who would would push to leave the EU for like migration reasons alone, for instance, and kind of if that's what you like, if you ostracizing me in the EU will cause them to become more popular, is it will be, well, Babish's version of let's like take everything from the EU with a pinch of salt attitude, and you know, kind of short like reducing immigration isn't working, a lot of his voters might go further in one direction or another. So like that's not a complete without merit point, but I think it's a he's repeating the criticism of media coverage focusing too highly on like anti-immigrant sentiment within him and Zeman's policies. And like I've seen Zeman covered here as like pro-Kremlin Zeman re-elected, which like
I'm not sure that's true.
As in kind of like he's not, you know, he's not what you would have had with Drahos, but that's not like a super invalid point, because it's kind of he is the Czech president and he's been re-elected at this point. I don't know what you expect to get if you like keep wanting the Czech Republic to work like within the EU as it is working now. Babiš isn't like super for making lots of sweeping changes, and I don't know. It's
it's a fair point, because like at the same time, Czech Republic is also one of the is one of the former Eastern Bloc success stories in terms of the EU. They're like one of the most economically strong. Yeah. The big question going into this in like whole big picture terms was, depending on the legislative election, depending on the presidential election, we could see Czech Republic begin the process of adopting the euro.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like, that was the biggest big picture thing you could get out of this. But I'd say that's probably not happening now.
Well, I think like that's the thing, isn't like that's not happening. And obviously people are upset about that. But it's I'm kind of in two minds about this, because like Babiš does like, as in I don't like any of Babiš's politics. But like he does kind of have a point in that Zeman is president again and is very for I will wait around as long as it takes for Babiš to remain prime minister. So like effectively like you probably have to think about working with Babiš, but his other angle of this is the media are 100% biased against me. Probably not, let's just say that. And then on top of that, I'm only being investigated because of my political enemies. Because the whole reason that people won't, that Babiš can't get a confidence vote in the parliament is because he's being investigated for effectively tax fraud, like with the EU. So kind of saying to the, like, I think part of this is kind of a grease the wheels and make it that I'm not being investigated anymore so that I can form a government properly, is kind of like too far in the pro, let's trust Babiš and see what he does kind of version of it.
The last little thing I wanted to mention about this that I thought was quite funny was basically everyone in Czech politics congratulated Zeman on being like reelected. And I mean like everyone. So like Drahos congratulated him. All the other like former presidential hopefuls congratulated him. The former president congratulated him. Babiš congratulated him. Juncker, Tusk. Various people in politics all around Europe, right? All congratulated him. It was all the polite, you know, politically correct thing to do, right? But then the Pirate Party, not an insignificant force in Czech politics, I should say, it were in the Czech parliament.
Yeah.
The leader of the Pirate Party was reached for a quote, Ivan Bartosz. And the quote he said in response to everyone congratulating Zeman stated that he was pleased about the strong support for Drahos. and nothing else.
Oh, that's probably what I would have said. I would have been like, ah, closer than some of you thought it was going to be, right?
Well, I'm out of here.
Oh god, it's similar in Iceland when like there's the pirate party there is quite a big force, and it's kind of just they have the best, like they have the fun best quips because there's no layer of, oh, we need to impress our like political allies and you know, what about the next backroom deal I need to make is never the attitude you get off, and it's always like, huh, that was an odd press release.
Moving over to Finland, who had their presidential election on January 28th.
Yeah.
Finland usually has a two-round presidential vote, but with the caveat, like most other two-round presidential votes, someone did get more than 50% of the vote in the first round.
Yes.
Yes. So incumbent president, oh Jesus, Finnish names, Sauli Niinisto.
Sure.
Niinisto. Okay, I'm going to go with... Sauli Niinisto received 62.7% of the vote in the first round. So he is doing his second term.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. This... it's worth noting as well that the next runner-up was from the Green League, Pekka Haavisto.
Yeah.
And he got 12.4% of the vote. So.
Popular president, then.
Seems to be a popular president, yeah. He's, well, technically he runs as an independent now. He has ties to, like, the National Coalition Party and the Christian Democrats.
Yeah.
Christian Democrats in Finland formed out of the National Coalition Party. They're both center-right parties. It's just one is secular while the other one's openly Christian.
Yeah.
So he has, like, this center-right leaning. He's a former Finnish Navy captain, and yeah, he will be running and he will be in service until 1st of March 2024.
He will be in service makes him sound like an appliance.
I'm sorry. No, he will be running efficiently until 2024. He said afterwards he's planning to retire. This is the last thing he's doing in politics. Mm-hmm. And also wanted to say that he has an adorable French bulldog, which is known as Finland's first dog, Lenu.
Okay.
Was re-elected. Some newspapers in Finland ran with that as their front page story.
Yes, not the hotly contested election that we saw in Czech Republic.
No, not at all. But a dog. The dog's back.
Uh-huh.
It's great.
Sure. And now for the international conflict section, which is not as dramatic as it sounds.
Well, I think if it gets any higher than this, like, we should call it the war section.
No, I like international conflict section.
Okay. But the next version of this,
okay,
the more intense version of this is the war section.
Sure, fine. I see your point. So Israel have announced that they're going to recall their ambassador from Poland, because the Polish Parliament, both houses of the Parliament, and the president has indicated that they'll probably sign it to make it a crime to ascribe responsibility to Polish government, country, and people for any crimes committed by the Nazis. So, like, yeah, basically this is kind of going off the... I don't think... It's not really, like, a problem that the Polish government has, but it's a... a lot of concentration camps, for instance, were in Poland. And, like, on one level, you could look at this as a... We want to be absolutely clear that it wasn't Polish people running this. This was a German Nazi party running concentration camps, and sometimes the concentration camps guards were. Sometimes like there was like a large Ukrainian cohort of people who were recruited for those kind of jobs, for instance. But quite specifically, like a low number or no Polish people were actually involved in directly running any of them. So like that's like a way of looking at it is kind of like the defense that is used for this. But kind of like on another note, it's kind of like as in this like isn't like totally factually true that creating some sort of like it is creating kind of on some level a Holocaust denial law, because while they weren't involved in running the camps, there were Polish people involved in ghettoizing people. There was organized ghettoizing. It was kind of like as in it's not a concentration camp, but it was kind of the precursors to it, or a way to round up people. There were people like who were informants to the German secret police, etc., and like people who were involved in like the day-to-day running of Poland, which sent people from Poland into concentration camps.
The Nazi party in Germany had collaborators like nearly everywhere. No one has a spick and span history of this.
I think the most obvious comparison I can think of for this and like the how broad it is would be if the Front National ran France and made it illegal to say that Vichy France was culpable in any war crimes, which is not true because they ran large bits of France for the Nazis in a very like adherent to whatever they wanted to do way. And it's kind of during the French parliamentary elections, there were lots of cases of Front National people, candidates coming out saying like, well, Vichy France wasn't all too bad, like it's totally fine, like French like in kind of a absolutist defense of French history of we weren't responsible for anything, meaning like me and everyone I'm descended from and everyone they knew at the time had nothing to do with anything you're saying, which is categorically not actually true.
It's this whole again of just like thinking history just stopped and there wasn't like a continuation of these problems that happened before. Like Vichy France no longer existed, but a lot of people that helped make Vichy France a thing or run like existed for a handful of years afterwards, and they were terrible people. So like as far as I understand, the Polish like zeitgeist around this is that there is a German compound word that I think directly translates as Polish death camp.
Right. Okay.
And it's basically it's used in Germany to talk about World War II's history. But as far as I understand, with the complicit understanding that when they refer to Polish death camp, it means that it was geographically in Poland.
Yes. Yeah.
However, the Polish issue with that is that they feel like, but no, you're making it sound like we ran and operated these things. By calling it the Polish death camp.
Which like this is the thing in that like you could definitely find an individual in Germany with that opinion. That opinion based on like some, I'm sure, very tenuous factual backing up that is kind of, you know, very cherry picked. Where you could skew that to somewhat make sense on some layer. But I think then legislating and making it illegal to suggest a link is exactly as you're saying, claiming that there was some sort of history pause where nobody in Poland did anything wrong or could possibly be accused of being like complicit or pro-Nazis in any way. And therefore, like, as in that's the layer on top of it, which I feel like they would rather ignore because they want to make it about insinuating that the Polish have any history of anti-Semitism is ludicrous because we were the victims. And it's like, well, yes, you were the victims, but also that's not a universal truth. that you can make illegal to say otherwise. The history behind it is more ambiguous than you're making it illegal to suggest.
Kieran here with a film recommendation vaguely related around this topic. Is Oscar-nominated Polish film Ida, I-D-A, which was about a Jewish... a nun who finds out that she was left at an abbey because she was Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And basically her tracking down her family to find that she was like... her parents were ratted out to the Nazi authorities
mm-hmm.
by some Polish people.
Mm-hmm.
So... like, this does seem to be that there are people within Poland who are taking a rather frank and dark look at their history and being like, some Polish people were definitely complicit in some of the horrible things that the Nazis did.
Yeah, I think this is kind of a layer of the PIS getting, the like ruling party in Poland, getting flack for their like immigration policies and kind of status on refugees. And it's kind of... layering on their like their opinion of who are Germany to say anything about refugees. They're where the Nazis right. came from, not to like, and it's, we've made it illegal for you to counter that with what about all the like collaborators in Poland at the time and people who were employees, etc., who did you like, it's not like that was a some sort of official Polish government position, because you know the Polish government wasn't really a thing. but it's kind of an odd thing. Oddly, like the thing about Israel and the way this is like a conflict with them is there are reports that there were discussions between Benjamin Netanyahu and the new Polish prime minister, Morawiecki, but the Senate vote went forward on the bill during the week without any changes, which made it sound like, as in kind of, they had announced effectively that there were going to be changes made based on discussions of Israel, and then they said they just didn't.
Right.
There's like there was one Israeli lawmaker quoted saying that this was effectively spitting in the face of Israel twice, because like, first you said you were going to do it and we said that might be a problem, and then you told us you'd change it and you didn't.
You specifically told us you would take our like
the stuff we said into consideration, and you just seem to ignore that completely. Anyway, there's a that's interesting. Anyway, it's a kind of a big deal if anyone removes it, like recalls their ambassador from anywhere, but this is kind of like with possibly like clear cause, and you can make arguments about what, like whatever you think about Israel, but kind of their like a self-proclaimed largely position as we need to defend Jewish history as part of our like international presence. I'm like, well, this would be an example of something they should probably step up fight.
So like, even if you kind of contest the idea that Israel is the global representation of all Jewish people, I'm sure there is like a grassroots Jewish organization that has also taken like issue with these laws.
Yeah, I'm sure. 100% definitely. I'm sure any grassroots Jewish organization would probably be like, we would prefer that you didn't do this, Poland.
Oh, God. Yeah. Anyway, moving to something that is a little less severe, sensitive, and historically horrifying. Croatia and Slovenia, a country we don't get to talk about enough, have an ongoing conflict over the new maritime border that has been drawn in one of their shared ports. So it's the it is the port of Piran. That's it. The Bay of Piran. Which now, due to the International Court of Arbitration, the new maritime border has been drawn that gives Slovenia control of about 80%. Recently, however, some Croatian fishermen have illegally crossed and fished into this new maritime boundary and have been fined, which is... seems like a small thing. I feel like this actually happens with like quite a bit between like lakes that are shared between Estonia and Russia and Finland and Russia.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, that involves Russia. This would be way more severe. I mean, they usually get...
probably just more complicated is kind of the... Yeah.
Yeah. They usually get, like, you know, the threat, the accusation that they're actually not fishermen, they're spies.
Yeah.
that's usually the accusation that gets thrown against them. But, but these are like two countries that get on relatively well. Nope, this has dragged on for ages and has caused like
incidents
within governments.
Partially, this is probably like isn't kind of this isn't really about like you know ability of particular fishermen in the area to fish in particular waters. It's almost certainly to do with Slovenia's large-ish port of Koper, and Trieste in Italy are both like big ports and are investing like millions a year in infrastructure, trying to like make themselves the dominant port. And a dispute over this bit of water and allowing Croatia to have like control of it would cause problems for their large port nearby, because you then have Croatia as like another party you need to deal with regarding like shipping flow in and out of it. So like people and or like the government and also companies who want to do business in Slovenia and kind of use Slovenia as a gateway to Southern Europe as a shipping route kind of don't want Croatia to have any leeway or any leverage on this, which they would largely with the way the border has been drawn with that is causing these fines, etc.
Jesus.
Fun.
Yeah.
Fisheries.
Fun stuff. Previously in Europe is produced by Hugh O'Brien and Kieran Dold. If you like the show, tell a friend. That kind of stuff helps a lot. And you can also leave a review on Apple Podcasts. That also really helps quite a bit. If you have any kind of review mechanism on your podcast listener of choice, you should leave a review there. It all feeds back in and makes more people find out about us and listen to us, which makes us feel warm and fuzzy inside, and it's nice. If you want to keep in contact with us, you can find us on Twitter, you can email us. All of this information is found on our website, previouslyineurope.eu. We also have a Facebook group where we chat and give updates about how the show is going, as well as post links to ridiculous things that are happening in Europe. And we also develop in-jokes, like our ongoing feud with Euronews, which is completely arbitrary. Thanks for listening!